This is Michael Plested of the Get Published Writing Podcast and the sci-fi comedy podcast Galaxy Billies, and you are listening to the debut podcast episode of Dan Absalonson. Now, you may be asking yourself why I'm lucky enough to be doing this little promo for Dan's inaugural episode. In truth, I figured it was my duty considering all the feedback and questions Dan sends me for my podcasts. The constant calls and voice recordings and email over and over haunting my dreams. In fact, I think I've started to randomly hear Dan's voice wherever I go. But enough about my psychosis. You can see for yourself what the fun is all about at www.irreverentmuse.com. Now, let the stalking of Dan begin.
Are listening to Big Axe, Small Hands, a podcast short story written and read by Dan Absalonson. Orange light flickered off their warm, glowing faces as they sat and stretched around a growing fire. Wood was stacked upon the crackling flames. Stomachs were padded, and children were hushed. They welcomed the setting sun. It meant the end of a day's toil, and the beginning of great stories told around the community fire. Though they were of a small race, it's well known that halflings were big when it came to two things, talking and eating. To them, every meal was a feast, and every night a celebration of storytelling. They knew no better way to spend the remaining hours of the night, once the food was gone, than to listen to the old one tell tales. As the pale pink of the horizon's hue faded to a dull, dark blue, he began.
Quiet now, children. Sit, and I will tell you a tale. Of a halfling like none you have ever heard of. He boasted strength greater than the dwarves, and stamina which surpassed the elves. As he grew, he joined the older halflings in their foot races and tree-climbing contests. He proved to have no equal. While most halflings his age had minds full of the usual things, farming, brewing, tobacco growing and eating, he found himself dreaming of fighting to defend those he loved. When he looked for someone in the village who could teach him these things, however, there were none to be found. And so he made up his mind to say goodbye and seek out those who could teach him.
With a light pack slung over his back, Halvard headed east alongside a clear, rushing river. The constant sound of the flowing water carried him along in a peaceful, dreamlike state. He lived off its fish and spent his days catching them, eating them, and making his way farther east. Other than the small creatures of the wood, Halvard did not cross paths with anyone for some time. His first lesson, however, would come from an unexpected place. Never again would he travel without a weapon through the wild lands of Cairn.
And over the hills we run.
He was walking along the river, singing quietly to himself, when he saw a small pack of wolves creeping slowly toward him out of the nearby forest. There were three of them. As they approached him, Halvard wrapped his sleeping blanket around one arm and threw the rest of his bundle into a tree. He used his arm as a weapon, sending a crushing blow to the side of the first wolf's head. The animal, attempting to bite Halvard's arm, failed to grasp flesh as the blow fell, but ripped much of the blanket away with chaotic tugs. Halvard used the opportunity to kick the wolf in the throat, and it released its grip and ran off into the woods. With the first wolf retreating, Halvard wrapped what was left of his blanket around his arm and faced the others. One growled and showed his teeth, while the other wolf made a rush for Halvard. Though he too received a strong strike from the halfling, his teeth met flesh, and with the taste of blood, the wolf became crazed. He pulled and twisted his mouth around Halvard's arm, all the while receiving swift, strong hits to the head. They failed to stop his wild rage. The halfling was reduced to using his stocky fingers to gouge at the wolf's eyes. It was enough to release the canine's hold, and Halvard moved quickly to the blinded beast, wrapping his tattered blanket neatly around the animal's neck to choke the life out of the wild dog until its body went limp. As he did this, the other dog barked but remained back. With the limp body fallen to the ground, he backed away slowly from the last wolf, never breaking his gaze with the fierce, yellow eyes. He made his way to the nearest tree. With the quick flick of his wrist, he snapped off a low-hanging branch and rushed at the beast, who proved to only need a few convincing smacks with a stick to flee. Halvard went over to his bag and pulled it down from the tree. He reached inside and took out some cloth. Wrapping it tightly around the wound, he picked up his things and went down to the river to wash it with fresh water. While stooping, he noticed some jagged rocks lying in the riverbed. They were very sharp, and supposing they could be of some use later, he grabbed a few after rewrapping the wound. He needed some time to recover. With the river and plentiful wood nearby, it seemed as good a place as any to stay for the night. He wanted to rest, but knew he must have a fire to keep more beasts from attacking him at night. With a good flame going, he started on a new project and left the fire in search of a very large stick. Once he found one to his liking, Halvard returned to the fire and sat, picking up one of the jagged rocks. He began using it to fashion the end of a stick to a fine point. The stone he used to sharpen the wood became dull as he used it, so he went back to the river and collected more to stow in his bag. With the stones collected, he unraveled a long string from his pack and placed some corn onto a hook at the end. He soon felt the string tug and pulled in an enormous silverback. He used a small knife to cut into its shimmering white belly and prepare it for cooking. Once it was ready, he placed it on the end of his spear and held it over the fire until it was just right. The hot meat was delicious, and he could feel it building back his strength. He was not bothered again that night by any more creatures of the wild. Halvard continued traveling east, following the river for many more days, until he came across another traveler. He thought it was a man at first, for it was a tall, lanky figure, stooping at the river in the distance. Then he saw it stand to hold something up to the light for inspection. Once he drew closer, he could see that it was an elf. The elf was gathering stones, the same kind Halvard had used to carve the tip of his spear. He couldn't believe he was going to meet someone from a race only known to him from the Old One's tales. "Hello, Sir Elf," he shouted as he approached. The elf stooped, evaluating a stone.
"Greetings," said the elf. "You're not a dwarf, are you?"
"No, Sir Elf, I am a halfling." The elf stuck out his hand and bent down a little to reach for Halvard's.
"My name is Ingliff, son of Silvnar."
Halvard reached up and shook the elf's hand.
"I am very happy to meet you, Ingliff," he said. "I am searching for those that can teach me the ways of combat."
I've heard that your kind are great marksmen. Could you show me how to use that bow upon your back?
I am sorry, Halvard, but I do not have time to teach you. I must be on my way.
I see that you're collecting those stones from the river. I have many that I could give you if you would but teach me even the basics of shooting with a bow. Halvard pulled his bag from his back and searched out the pouch containing the sharp stones. He opened the bag and held it up for Ingolf to see.
I mean no offense in this, young halfling, but how do I know I'm not wasting my lesson on someone who won't be able to use the skill I will teach? Are not halflings farmers and herdsmen? I've been told you are a peaceful folk, and I'm just not sure someone from your race could...
I am no ordinary halfling, good sir, Halvard said, cutting the elf off. I have heard elves are very fast, but I tell you, I could beat you to the edge of the forest just there with these little legs of mine, the elf laughed.
If you can do that, I will not only teach you how to shoot, but how to make arrows and a bow as well.
Halvard clapped his hands. Let's have a foot race then. The elf produced a smile of his own, putting down his stones and taking off his weapons and pack.
I'll even give you a head start, said the elf.
Oh no, kind elf. I will earn this lesson.
As you wish.
They both turned towards the forest. On your mark, young halfling, I wait for your word. Go! Halvard yelled, and they took off, kicking up thin sand as they fled towards the trees. The elf pulled away, leading as they advanced from sand to grass. Halvard, however, knew from many foot races that there was much to gain in pacing yourself. The elf's lead began to shrink, and he soon found himself very winded. He watched as short legs carried a stubby body slowly and evenly past his tall, slender strides. He was unable to keep up as Halvard pulled slowly away to the trees. When the elf made it to the forest's edge, he shouted in very measured breaths,
"How did you do that? Are all of your kind able to run as you do?"
Halvard smiled and spoke.
No, I told you. I am like no other halfling.
The smile traveled to the face of the elf.
Well, I suppose I won't be able to get away from you. I will have to give you that lesson, as promised. Now let us find you a firm stick to make you a nice bow while we're here near the trees.
The two made their way back to the river. The elf didn't have time to show Halvard how to make a string, so he explained the method as they walked, and promised one from his pack. Halvard soon learned that the stones were used for arrowheads. Once a bow was made up for Halvard, Ingolf used some of his arrows to show the halfling how to shoot. Halvard was no marksman yet, but he took to it quickly. Ingolf seemed pleased.
With some practice, I have no doubt you will become an excellent shot.
Halvard thanked him for the lesson and gave him all of the stones he had collected earlier. They parted with friendly goodbyes, and Halvard continued traveling east alongside the river. As he walked, he gathered stones, made arrows, and practiced shooting them at objects near the woods. A handful of days later, he saw some mountains piercing the sky a little ways into the forest, and smoke rising above the trees in the distance. With the smoke guiding him, he stumbled onto a village. All he found was an unattended fire, and its occasional crackle was the only sound he could hear. The shelters scattered around looked like homes, but not what Halvard was used to. They almost could have been made by his kind, if not for the clumsy construction. He walked into the nearest one, and there was a table surrounded by chairs with very thick legs. Perhaps it was the style, but he suspected the inhabitants, though not tall, carried a lot of girth in their short stature. He lingered for a bit, scanning the living area for more clues. All of a sudden, he heard a loud thump in the distance. He thought it best to make his way back outside, so he wouldn't be seen as an intruder. He heard it again.
It sounded like something smacking upon a tree. He followed the sound, and as it grew louder, he slowed his pace. A huge rock flew past him and hit a tree only a few handbreadths away. Hey, who's throwing those? Suddenly, several figures a bit taller than Halvard came from beyond the thick trees at a sprint. They weren't halflings. They must have been dwarves. Halvard had always wanted to meet a dwarf, and here was a small crowd of them. He pulled his new bow off his back, but used it like a walking stick as he waited to see what they would do. None were armed, and they all had youthful, if not gruff, faces.
Who are you?
The tallest of them said as they came to a stop.
Hey, is that an elf's bow?
Another young dwarf with a short yet thick black beard spoke up.
No, that's too small to be an elvish bow. But it looks just like one,
the first dwarf said. Halvard wondered if they forgot who was holding said bow and began addressing them. Hello, young sirs. My name is Halvard.
Well, that's a weird name,
the tall dwarf cut in.
What are you anyway? A fairy?
They all laughed, but Halvard kept a cool smile upon his face and waited for their cackles to die down before he spoke again. I am a halfling. What is it that you were doing just now? The tall one spoke up again.
We are practicing for the ceremony tomorrow.
Ceremony? What kind of a ceremony would involve the tossing of large stones into trees? He hoped they wouldn't be throwing the stones at anyone. The dwarf, who seemed to be the oldest, spoke again.
It is a ceremony held at this time every year to see who among the young is ready to go and work among their fathers in the mines.
Where does the rock throwing come in, young? Halvard asked with a puzzled look on his face, raising an eyebrow and lowering his chin.
My name is Throfinn.
He made a short bow.
You stand behind a line and must be able to throw a stone far enough to fly past another line drawn further along upon the ground. Yeah, and last year he couldn't do it,
the black-bearded dwarf said, pointing and making a face at his taller kin. Throfinn moved towards him, but Halvard stopped him with a hand on the shoulder. The dwarf spun in anger, and Halvard spoke quickly. Would you mind teaching a little halfling like me how to throw stones as you do? He pulled back his sleeve to show large scars still healing upon his arm, and said with a smile, I have had some trouble with wolves, and it might come in handy if I run out of arrows. All hostility fell from Throfinn's face.
Sure, we've got a big pile built up over here,
he said, pointing back to where they had come from.
Follow me.
Halvard soon learned how to lift with his legs instead of his back. They also taught him how to use the weight of his body, not just the strength of his arms, to heft small boulders towards a target. They all took turns, throwing from the edge of a clearing into the trees. All of them were able to hit the nearest trees, but only Throfinn could throw past them. It helped that he was taller and obviously stronger than the others. Halvard had thrown no farther than any of the smaller dwarves, but even that had surprised them. He learned once again what the other races thought of halflings and their simple lives. But Halvard was just warming up. He was trying to get the right form in his throws, carefully mimicking the dwarves' technique. The pile was beginning to dwindle, and Halvard noticed that it seemed more plentiful than it really was, for there was a huge stone underneath. He waited for the dwarf in the front of the crowd to heave his stone, and they all watched as it crashed into a tree. Pieces of bark exploded and fell to the ground in rough flakes. Halvard pondered that the elves wouldn't approve of this method of practicing. I'm very impressed with your stone-throwing, young dwarves. They all turned, but I grew up hearing tales of your kind being great with the pick and the axe. Is it true that you dwarves know how to wield an axe in combat? Throfinn answered for the whole group.
Yes, it is true. Why do you care, stranger?
Because I would like to learn from the dwarves how to use an axe as a weapon. Throfinn began to laugh, and soon all of his peers joined in. Throfinn shouted over the laughter.
What makes you think you could even handle an axe, halfling?
Halvard didn't need words to communicate his point. He simply walked over to the pile of stones, brushed the remaining few off the large boulder beneath, and threw it into the trees, knocking over three of them before it rested on the ground, a blanket of dust rising above it. It was then that Halvard chose to speak. "I'm a quick learner." None of the dwarves had anything to say. The older dwarves had all been in the caves, mining for metals. They came out for dinner, and Thrafinn introduced Halvard to them. He was welcomed by all, and when they heard of his request, they offered him a place in their ceremony the following day. These dwarves had a tradition. They only taught someone who had passed that test how to wield an axe. So it was that Halvard stayed overnight in their village, sharing in their stories and their food. He offered to go catch some fish at the river, but none of the dwarfs said they would eat fish, and made strange faces when he kept trying to offer. So he stayed and ate their meat. The next day he saw Thrafinn throw his small boulder, not only past the line, but farther than any of the others. Halvard didn't want to steal the young dwarf's glory, so he threw his stone just a bit behind Thrafinn's. He did prove to be an apt pupil. The dwarves were so impressed with his skill that they asked him to stay a while longer to continue his training and learn how to make his own battle axe. He went into the mines with them and gathered his own metal. With the help of the dwarves, he made a fine weapon, balanced perfectly for his small frame. By the time he left, few dwarves could best him with wooden practice axes. He said his goodbyes and made his way back to the river. Halvard wondered if he was dreaming, for once again he saw smoke rising into the distance. When he came upon the camp, he was surprised to see that it was his old friend Surefoot, the fastest sprinter in the village. After him, of course. "Halvard, it is good to see you. Is that a battle axe?" "Surefoot, what brings you this far east? It is not safe out here." "I had to come, Halvard. Our people are in trouble." "What kind of trouble?" "There have been brave wolves coming into our village." "That is why you should not be out here. I am glad you have made it this far uninjured. We must get back to the village." "I will pack up my things so we can be on our way," Surefoot said. "No, you continue making supper. Catch some fish for me as well. While you prepare our meal, I will make a way for us to return home along the river." "But Halvard, I cannot swim." "There will be no need for that. We will sail downstream upon a wooden craft. This axe may serve me for more use than defense this day," he said as he softly patted the side of the handle. As Surefoot went back to the river to catch more fish, Halvard cut down the oldest tree he could find. With his sharp axe, it was quick work, though, due to its age, its circumference was massive. He cut off a portion and began to carve it into a rough, bow-like shape. Once he had each end coming up to a point, he climbed atop the tree and began to cut away a place for them to sit. When he was done, he thought it looked like a small version of something from the old one's tales. His boat had no sail or fine finish, but it would float, and that was all that mattered. The strong river current would take care of the rest. With the fish cooked and his things packed, Surefoot climbed into the boat. Halvard pushed the craft to the water and jumped on board. The current pulled them slowly away, but soon they gained great speed. As they floated west, they ate warm fish and watched the trees fly past them through the darkening sky. They traveled silently, listening to the sounds of the water against their boat. Just as the sun was beginning to set, they saw the soft glow of the village fire reflected upon the water in the distance. As the sky was filling with a bright red, they left the boat on shore and ran to see how their kinsmen were doing. The village had not been disturbed yet. Halvard found the Old One, knowing his account of what had happened would be the most accurate.
"Many nights," said the Old One, "there have been wolves coming into the village. So far, they have been chased away, but their courage seems to grow. They have been coming back every night lately. The brave ones of our village are not getting their work done in the day because of their vigilance all night."
"I will take care of them. You tell our brothers that they will get some sleep this night."
"I will do that, young Halvard. You get some rest now. It will be some time until the wolves show up. Go up to your parents. You will know when the beasts are drawing near by the sound of their fierce howling."
Halvard followed the Old One's advice, but first instructed some of his friends to start an extra fire and to keep it burning until he came back to them. His parents had a little party with his return home. They ate and talked, much as they always had, but it was odd doing so inside. Usually the whole village was out, talking and eating together. Soon their bulging stomachs got the best of them, and they all found sleep. Halvard awoke to the sound of howling in the distance. He rose and made his way towards the fires. Taking out all of his arrows, he gave some to his friends and laid the rest on the ground.
"Light a few on the fire when I tell you."
His friends could only nod in reply, their legs beginning to shake underneath them. He could hear the slow howls growing louder. He set his axe down near his feet. If any were to get past his arrows, he wanted to be ready. As he saw the first shimmer of moonlight play off one of the foul beast's eyes, he whispered a command.
"Now, set fire to the arrows."
He joined them and lit an arrow strung in his bow. As the first wolf came farther out of the woods, a sharp twang sounded from Halvard's bow. A flaming arrow streaked through the dim sky, hitting its mark with a sudden thud. The wolf yelped and flailed to the ground. He tried to get at the arrow with his teeth, but as he rolled, the flaming shaft sank deeper into his flesh. His cacophonous screams of death created such terror in the two halflings at Halvard's side that they dropped their flaming arrows and fled. Halvard grabbed an arrow from the ground, taking care not to let it burn his hand. Soon he spotted movement behind some trees, and sure enough, out came another wolf. Patiently he waited until the wolf came closer. He didn't want to set fire to the woods or waste an arrow on a long shot. The wolf walked past his companion, now a limp, smoldering pile of charred flesh and singed hair. It didn't smell pretty, and the wolf snorted as he walked past. He was now within range, and Halvard made good use of another arrow. Hitting this one in the leg, the wolf howled in pain and began to jerk and spin violently, the flame keeping him from pulling it out with his teeth. These wolves were the enemy, but Halvard couldn't bear to see even these evil creatures suffer. He strung his bow around his chest, picked up the last flaming arrow, and walked quickly towards the madly dancing dog. He stuck his arrow in the ground and, hefting his axe, swung it swiftly, connecting with a blow to the wolf's neck. The head came clean off and bounced oddly away, leaving a short trail of blood and flames in its wake. Halvard threaded another arrow. He gazed into the trees and looked for more movement. Three more wolves jumped out from a thick collection of bushes. He immediately shot the closest one. This one he managed to get in the head, and it yielded up no more than a few muffled whimpers before falling lifeless to the ground. One of the wolves then charged him, and he had to stop the animal's bite with his bow. His axe lay at his feet. The wolf pulled and twisted, but Halvard gripped it tighter. He saw the other canine moving in, so he raised the dog above the ground and threw him into the woods along with his bow. The dog spun through the air with a cry, hit a tree with a crunch, and died with a bow still clenched between his teeth. Halvard reached down for his axe, just as the last wolf leaped for his throat. He didn't grab his new weapon in time, however, and the wolf's teeth found their way into Halvard's thick neck. He cried out as he felt burning pain. Ah! His blood felt warm as it slid down to pool into his chest. He reached up, trying to pry the beast's mouth apart, but his strength was leaving him quickly. The wolf had a good grip and very strong jaws. Halvard began hitting the wolf, frantically crushing his fists into the canine's head, but it was of no use. The animal had tasted his blood and become entranced in a wild rage. Just then Halvard thought he saw a flicker of movement in the corner of his eye. He may have heard the sound of something whooshing through the air, but it was then that he lost consciousness. As his eyes closed and his head fell limp to the wolf's unmerciful teeth, an arrow struck the wolf directly in the eye, traveling through to the back of his head. The wolf released his deadly grip and twitched on the ground for a few moments. A tall shadow moved quickly to the fallen halfling. He pulled some dark, pungent leaves out of a pouch at his waist side, and after crushing them in his hand, spread them across the wound of the motionless Halvard. The young halfling awoke in his parents' house, his mother rushing over to him with a cup of water.
Oh my, you're awake. Drink this, my boy. Your mother will nurse you back to health.
Halvard sat up and stretched. Oh my, I am a bit sore in the neck. He reached up and pulled the wrappings off.
Halvard, what are you doing?
You know I have always been a quick healer, mother. Is my friend the elf still here? I must thank him. Halvard's father walked in just then, a large bundle of firewood wrapped in his arms. No, son. I'm afraid he was in a terrible hurry. He left into the night once he was sure you would be all right. I see that you have recovered well, my boy. Yes, I have, father. Thank you. I hope someday he will visit us again, so I can thank him. I think I will set about making arrows for him as a gift of gratitude. A hot cup of tea and a nap would do me well.
Yes, it would,
his mother said, and she set about heating up some water. Halvard's small village was not bothered by wolves or beasts for some time, but when there was a problem, he was there with a bow, some arrows, and his steady axe. Never again did he lose a battle with forest creatures from the wild lands of Cairn, nor did he discover the true nature of his identity. He did, however, keep his village peaceful and safe until he died at a ripe old age. The end. This is Dan the Art Man, Dan Absalonson. Thank you so much for listening to my first ever podcast fiction piece. I really hope you enjoyed it. There'll be another one for you right here on my blog next month. It's kind of a sci-fi cop chase story. It's called My Last Day. So, a little bit about this story. This story was written for an anthology called Tales of the Children, which are supposed to take place in the land of Cairn, from P.G. Holyfield's podcast novel, Murder at Avedon Hill. If you guys haven't listened to this, I highly recommend it. It is awesome. I wrote Halvard as an avatar of Arjun, and so the name actually comes from a Norwegian name, which means Defender of the Rock. So that's where I got the name Halvard, and how that ties in with him being an avatar of the Child of Aj named Arjun. If you don't know what I'm talking about, go and check it out on pgholyfield.com. And you can learn all about the different children of Aj and his ridiculously awesome patio book, Murder at Avedon Hill. I don't want to use up any more of your valuable time. I really appreciate you guys coming over here and giving me a chance. Find me on Twitter, @DanDanTheArtMan, or on Facebook, /DanDan the Artman.
This is Dan's service droid R2D3PO. He makes me do all the audio editing. He wanted me to tell you that the music used in this podcast can be found at www.archive.org and the sound effects at www.freesound.org. Check the show notes for direct links to the audio and further information. Notice how he didn't thank me.
This podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 U.S. license.
I hope to be in your earbuds again next month. Thank you so much for listening.
The Land of Cairn. It is a world where gods can choose to live mortal lives to directly affect events in the world, and often do. The river of magic is rising. Monsters are moving into Cairn through tears in the fabric. The dead are escaping Callan's abyss. And the children of Aj have returned, just as the prophets foretold. But even as these overarching events play themselves out, a piece of the puzzle falls into place in the seemingly unremarkable town of Avedon Hill. Aramis Cragen, retired Aranic advisor, arrives at Avedon Hill and is asked to investigate the murder of Greta Platt, the Avedon Manor housemistress. But in doing so, Aramis uncovers secrets that threaten Cairn's very foundation. What begins as a search for justice becomes a fight for survival, all in a place where nothing is what it seems. Welcome to the Land of Cairn. Welcome to Murder at Avedon Hill, a podcast novel by P.G. Holyfield, featuring some of the great voices of podcasting and podcast fiction.
A perfect place for Greta Platt to escape the troubles of the day. So beautiful, so inspiring. Also a fine place for someone to catch her defenseless and end her life.
Not now, Joris. You chose the wrong time for one of your rants about undead threats rising
in Cairn. There is evil here in Avedon Hill. You can never be sure what will greet you at your door.
Of course it has to be alive. You should have known that, monk.
You promised us the hunter, and you have failed us. You promised us a power beyond our understanding, and again, you have failed us.
You have not seen what I have seen. Events are transpiring that neither you nor I can affect.
Aaron's powers have peaked from under those covers. I hope you both survive long enough to find a use.
Brother of Aaron, look how you've aged. You've spent so much of your life in darkness.
Murder at Avedon Hill by P.G. Holyfield. Sit back and let the mystery unfold. Learn more at pgholyfield.com and patiobooks.com.
You had the crazy idea that writing your story was going to be the hardest part, and it would have been too if you hadn't wanted to get it published. But you had to go there. You decided you wanted to get your story to a publisher, see it in print, and become the next Stephen King, didn't you? Come on, admit it. You know I'm right. You wanted the adoring fans who travel untold miles to see you at a signing, fans willing to do anything for the briefest glimpse of you. Except publishers and agents are so unreasonable. They demand that you follow their rules and send in synopsis and sample chapters. Heck, they even insist that you format your work to their specifications. And while we're on the subject, who are they anyway? I mean, any publisher or agent will do, won't they? And really, anyone you submit to will totally believe your mom's word, right? Your story is totally the greatest thing ever, isn't it? Feeling a little deluded, aren't we? See, that's where Get Published comes in. Get Published is a bi-weekly podcast that discusses many of the things that you, a submitting writer, may be faced with. There are interviews with other writers, agents, editors, and publishers that delve beneath the covers to try and give you the insight you need to achieve your goal. You know the one. Come on, say it with me. The goal to get published. Get Published is available for download on iTunes or from www.michellplested.com.
From the author that brought you V&A Shipping comes a new audiobook that's sure to make you sit up and think, what? Is this guy crazy or something? I mean, he keeps writing these weird books and they don't make a whole lot of sense or anything. I mean, how does he expect me to? For a barbarian, life is simple. Hunt, eat, build. There's not much else. But for Billy Barbarian, there has to be more to life. So he's decided to head down to the big city and check things out for himself. In the mighty, booming metropolis of Sethopolis, Billy seeks employment and finds it. His first job is to protect Miss Celine Dijon while she's giving a concert at Stump Arena. Through his assignment, Billy gets to meet the famous real estate developer Ronald Stump. But the fun and joy don't last long, as Billy uncovers a plot against Miss Celine's life. Can this sturdy barbarian do what needs to be done to protect her? Is he strong enough and quick-witted enough? Join Billy on his adventure with dragons, skyscrapers, wizards, and evil plots as he tries to keep Miss Celine safe. Will his first job in the big city be his last? Find out! Billy Barbarian is a new podcast novel from author J.R. Murdoch. Find out more at jrmurdoch.com or ofgnomesanddwarves.com, and now available on podiobooks.com.